This is not a test. This is your emergency broadcast system announcing the commencement of the annual purge sanctioned by the U.S. government. Weapons of Class 4 and lower have been authorized for use during the purge. All other weapons are restricted. Government officials of ranking 10 have been granted immunity from the purge and shall not be harmed. Commencing at the siren, any and all crime, including murder, will be legal for 12 continuous hours.
And welcome back to the Film Reel Cast. It's another week and it's another podcast. And this week we'll be discussing such topics as if you could kill someone legally, would you do it? How would you kill them? Would you have a conscience? Would you feel bad after? And who would you kill? So we'll be asking those questions. And to do that, I don't need to mention names. All I need is this intro. And that's right, you guessed, it's Countdown. How are you?
I knew that was coming. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm really well. And it's just you and me this week, isn't it?
It is, unlucky for you. But yes, it is just you and me.
It is. But I like it that way because I can force you into having a point of view and you don't get to sit on the fence or kind of back out of certain topics. So
I can definitely try.
You can try, but I just won't let you. Tell everyone, what film we're doing this week, Cal?
We are doing The Purge. I can't remember if it was you or me that chose it, but it's The Purge. I don't know what year it is, but it's 2013 on Amazon Prime in the UK.
Exactly. Well said you. And this is a film we spoke about quite a few times that, shall we do this? It's a relatively short film. But it's quite topical and it could be quite good to discuss on the podcast. Just like last week when we did My Super Ex-Girlfriend. If everyone's listened to that and you're still subscribing to this podcast, good for you. I'm a little bit worried, but thank you very much. That was a very twisted podcast, but it was really good fun, wasn't it?
It was. I don't know if it was twisted. It had just had some very, I would say, controversial topics that we discussed. But we all know Neil that little bit better now.
It's so big.
We do. And we know you much better as well from it, don't we?
Do we? I don't think we discuss me that much. I think we concentrate on Neil, really.
I think you realise that you're a person who don't get complaints in certain departments.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, if you ever had to suck a splinter out of someone's hand, I'd be going to you.
That's good to know. I'm glad I'm top of that list.
Well, after what you said, that you've never had any complaints, I think, yeah.
Well, no, that record still stands.
Yeah. Why, how busy have you been since the last podcast? Jesus.
Wow.
You ordered those knee pads from Amazon, and now I know why. Have you been particularly busy?
If you haven't got a cushioned floor, it can be a little bit painful.
I haven't had any complaints since. Jeez.
Exactly. Got to make it comfy then. You can be there for a while. So.
Oh, God, we'd have to do that Life as a Prostitute podcast and obviously have you on.
Because... Hey, that's pushing it a little bit far. I'm not a prostitute. Thank you very much.
Just clearly can't happy then.
No, just know where I'm confident.
amazing. But that's right, we are doing 2013 The Purge, which is on Amazon Prime, which is directed by James DeMonaco, who wrote a lot of the Purge films, all of them I do believe, and directed them as well. The Purge Anarchy, The Purge Election Year, The First Purge, and The Purge Forever. So there's really good continuity. And, you know, the films really, really aren't that bad as it goes on. I've just finished watching The Purge Election Year, which I really liked. It's got Frank Grillo in, who plays Crossbones in a Marvel film. And he's a really cool dude. So they're really good films to watch. Maybe we'll just carry this on and go through all of the Purge films. I don't know if you'll be up for that at all.
I didn't hate this one, so I'll give another one a try, yes.
They're very, very samey, but they come from a lot of different angles. They talk about like the forefathers and like the election side of things, of that some people aren't up for the purge, some people are, and it's kind of gets very political, some of them. They're good, fun films, very, very easy. But this one is obviously Blumhouse. And we've done a few Blumhouse films before. I believe we've done Get Out. We have done the Belko Experiment. I really would like to do Happy Death Day because they're really good films. They're fun, easy films, quite inoffensive. And yeah, for Five Nights at Freddy's, I mean, there's so many films that they've done. And I mean, Halloween Ends, we've done those ourselves, all the Halloween films that we both did, and me and you, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. It was just the two of us, I think.
Yeah, and Megan, did you see Megan at the cinema?
Is that that weird doll that comes to life?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't really come to life, but yeah, yes, I've seen that at the cinema.
Interesting. What did you think of that?
It was so predictable. You knew the ending before, like, you got halfway through the film. So it was all right, but it was also a bit shit because you just knew. There was no suspense in it.
Yeah, but Blumhouse, I mean, wow, they just churn films out, don't they? And they're very well known for low budget, but massive high profit. Like Happy Death Day, 5 million, made 125 million. And when you look at Get Out, which we reviewed, scored really highly, 5 million, made 252 million. I mean, they're just machines, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to have shares in it, to be honest. Even just like 2% would be nice.
It would be. I mean, Megan, 12 million, and it made 181 million. And I could go on with The Black Phone, which we've reviewed as well. 23 million, and it made 161 million. Sorry, that's our opening weekend, 23 million, then made 161. So they just smash out these films. And again, we talk about Black Phone. In this film, Ethan Hawke's in this. This is his second recent appearance on the podcast. Go and check out our Black Phone review. That was a good film as well, wasn't it? That done pretty well on the pod, I think.
I definitely preferred The Black Phone to this. I found The Black Phone pretty good and kind of unique in a lot of ways, whereas this was all right, but again, maybe a little bit predictable in comparison.
Don't know about predictable on our first viewing, and we did review the end of it together, and it kind of, you admit it went in a direction that you didn't expect it to go in.
Yeah, the ending not so much, but the flow up to that bit, you kind of knew what was coming. The very last bit, no, but the build up to that, it was a bit irritating and a little bit like, why we'll get to it, but it just there were lots of bits where I had a lot of questions and it just created more questions than answers. Well, and I found it a little bit irritating.
Yeah, hopefully we can answer some of those on the way through. But the cast of this is relatively small, which we're going to keep it to. You've got Ethan Hawke, who plays James Sandin, who's a salesman, a rep for the security company, basically making blood money from the purge, selling security systems to houses. You've got his wife, Mary Sandin, played by Lena Headey. You've got the son. I know you've got loads of opinions on the son, Charlie, played by Max Burkholder. You've got Zoe, the daughter, played by Adelaide Kane. And you've got the bloody stranger, as he's called. I don't think it's like bloody stranger, but he is a bloody stranger, played by Edwin Hodge. And the kind of protagonist, Reese Wakefield. On IMDb, he's polite leader, which I don't say he is.
No, I wouldn't say he's polite in any way, to be honest. I'd say he's quite threatening.
Yep, shoots his mate in the head just for getting loud and in his face. So not very polite. But the budget for this was $3 million and it grossed in the US 64 and it made worldwide just short of 90 million. So again, another massive hit from Blumhouse. And according to the director, James DeMonaco, he came up with the idea, or his wife came up with the idea, when he had a road rage incident. When someone cut them up, he got out of the car, they had a fist fight, the police turned up, and the guy was so obnoxious that his wife said, wouldn't it be great to have one day of the year when you can murder people for nothing? Because he hinted at the guy, and that's when he came up with it. So it's interesting how these come up, and he gets, four films out of it, and a TV series, and makes a shitload of money, doesn't he?
There wasn't a lot of thought put into that then, but yeah, I'd love to be able to come up with ideas that made me millions. That would be fantastic.
It would be nice. I mean, if you could do this, the purge, 12 hours, one day a year, where you can kill anyone, as many people, commit any crime you wanted, would you do it? I'm not talking about murder, but when it's, you get the green light to go and commit crime, would you go and do it?
I don't think so, because I'm a bit boring. I don't know what crime I would like to commit if I could. I already speed, so that's technically a crime. That's about as exciting as it gets.
It's such a mental case. I didn't realise.
I know, right?
You're such an adrenaline junkie.
What would you do then? Go on, what would you do?
It doesn't have to be killed, does it? It can just be...
It can be anything.
It can be anything. I mean, it could be... I mean, I don't know. Say if you had, like, a noisy neighbour or something like that, and you wanted to go and just... I don't know, like, you could get your revenge. You could pour petrol over their house or something like that and do stuff. So it'll give you license to
surely fix that
those
would,
problems.
Would kind of lead into them dying if you were going to burn their house down.
But again,
or would you
it doesn't
like
matter
give
if it
them...
does.
Okay, so what? So you're saying you'd go out to just burn the house down, and if they got killed in the process, that's, oh, well, never mind, move on. New
yeah.
neighbours.
Yeah, definitely. And it would, you could, if, I don't know, people are speeding, you could put, like, stingers down the road and set fire to the cars, or just do anything that just frustrates you, anything that annoys you that the local council aren't fixing. You could think, fuck this, I am going to take the law into my own hands and I'm going to end it. So, it'd be good. I'd definitely have a go at doing something. I wouldn't... like the murder bit, and it would be a really scary evening because you're just as vulnerable as everyone else, aren't you?
Yeah, I would probably be like these people, but I would just make sure I knew what my children were doing, and I'd just lock myself in and not come out, I think, because I would be more afraid that people hate me, so I'd probably be more of a target.
But you're lucky because you do have like a big courtyard of private gates. I'm vulnerable. You know,
I have a courtyard.
Beg to differ. So, or you could, or you don't have your yacht anymore, your boat, do you? Let's say you could go in the middle of the ocean.
I never had a yacht, thank you. It
or
was a
boat.
Seaboat, but I never had a yacht.
No, well, see, it's tricky, isn't it? What would you do? What would you do? But I suppose.
What if I had a boat?
Well, if you know, but I mean, you don't have your boat anymore, but you do have like big walls and staff to defend you. So,
I have no staff, just a husband. Right. Same, but no staff.
But yeah, I think it'd be really, really interesting. But for those who haven't seen The Purge, the story goes as thus. It's really simple. In an America full of high crime and overcrowded prisons, the government has sanctioned an annual 12-hour purge where criminal activity, including murder, becomes legal. A night where citizens regulate themselves without any punishment or repercussions. On this night, the Sandin family wrestle with their moral compass when son Charlie Sandin lets in a stranger to the house who's hunted by a fellow group of purgers. And these purgers gain entry into the house after threatening to let him go, and they will let the family go. But they break into the house and affect everyone's moral compass, and what they do possibly might change the lives of everyone and the local community forever. But this podcast, as usual, will contain plot spoilers. And if you're a normal listener to this every week, it probably will contain foul language as well. Isn't that right, Kelly?
Yes, it is. I'm here, so there will definitely be foul language.
Great. All I wanted was your honesty. That's all I wanted. And the start of this film, which is sometimes we get.
No, you always get honesty. I'm not necessarily vocal about it like you would like me to be, but you definitely always get honesty.
So we do get honesty, but sometimes you don't talk and tell everyone. So how do we know? That doesn't make sense, does it?
Well, that's because what I do say is honest, but I just don't necessarily fill in quite as many blanks as you would like me to with the honest information. I just stay quiet. But what I do say, what I do verbalise for people to hear is honest and accurate. But sometimes I just like my privacy and don't want the world to know that amount of detail about me.
You don't want the world to know, but You're quite happy to say you've never had any complaints whilst giving out jobs.
I was.
But you want to defend your privacy. That's
not
amazing.
Exactly forthcoming with that information. And to be fair, that wasn't the most, the biggest revelation from last week's pod anyway. I'd say that crown sits firmly on Neil's head.
Exactly. I think it replaces his halo.
Yeah. Okay. That's being kept up by horns.
He's not here to defend himself. You know that.
Oh, well.
So this film, which I say is only about an hour and a half, it starts off with footage of people being murdered, basically. And you asked the question, is this actual footage or not?
Yeah, when I watched it the first time, I obviously know it's not footage of a purge as such, but is it real footage of fights and shootings and stabbings and real people getting beaten up in real life, but for different things?
Well, according to IMDb, it isn't, according to them. But some of it actually looks like it.
It does. Yeah, that's very good then. If it isn't, that is very good footage. I think that's pretty good.
Because you're thinking, if they showed actual people dying, wouldn't that be a snuff film?
But I think it would add to the, but then I suppose, do you have to get different permissions to do that kind of thing? Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, I just think surely it can't be. Maybe the footage where it's just rioting and there's people in the streets chucking bricks and stuff. Yeah, that's fair enough. But I don't think the ones that people are dying, I don't think they're actual real footage, because it's not like Cannibal Holocaust when it's not meant to be found footage of people being eaten and stuff like that. I just think it's made up. But I don't know. I mean, you can't really trust what's on IMDb. But the start of this film, you see, I wouldn't call him a hero at all, but Ethan Hawke, James Sandin, and he does something instantly that gets my back up. And he was asked to do this by a good friend, Jason Blum, who said, can you just be in this film? And he was only given $3,000. He didn't really take much money because he is a friend. And they just wanted to push this initial idea out of the film with an A-lister in just to kind of boost it. And he agreed to do it. I don't know whether he got any money after off the back of the success. But I thought it was really good for him to just be in this. Because he is a really good actor, Ethan Hawke. He was great in the Black Phone, wasn't he?
He was very good. To be honest, I couldn't tell you anything else that he's been in because I'm not ironically into films as much as you are, but yes, he was very good, and I'm actually that makes goes up in my estimations that he did only take $3,000. Okay, fine, if he took more because it made so much money, kind of fair enough, but the fact that he was prepared to do it for so little, I think that's quite good.
He's in a really good film called Training Day. He's overshadowed by Denzel Washington. It's a really, really good film, and I think that was on Amazon Prime at some point. But if you ever get a chance to watch that, Training Day, it's superb. Denzel Washington's fucking awesome in it. But it's quite an old film, but it's well worth watching. But in this, he does something that I hate. He's obviously selling security systems, and he's like top of the sales this year for The Purge. And when the secretary or whoever it is says, oh, you've done it, you're number one.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, no, it's a team. Like, you're involved as well.
You're number one, Mr. Sandin. You got it, sir. Right. Came out on top.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Congratulations to you too, Susan.
You don't have to say that.
No, Susan, it's a team win.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, well, safe night.
Safe night, Mr. Sandin.
I always find that a really condescending thing, isn't it?
The way he says it, definitely, yes. But I think the sentiment behind it when people say it, I think is quite a nice thing and can be quite genuine. The way he says it, yeah, he's a bit of an arrogant prick and he's just trying to make himself look like the all-round nice guy, but actually just look like a bellend.
Yeah, I think that's proven that when they're all sitting around the dinner table, and you've got the whole family, including like Charlie and Zoe and Mary, he's like, okay, let's everyone go through what they did today or what they're grateful for. And he kind of rushes them along so he can just say and talk about his own victory and how good he is, can't he?
Yeah, I think that is quite an American thing though, because you see that in a lot of films, don't you, where they go around the table and say what they're thankful for or what their achievement's been today and things like that. I think that's got to be an American thing, because I don't know anyone that does that myself.
What would you be thankful for?
Immediately what came into my mind then is, but you're not allowed to put that in. You're not allowed to put that down.
I do the editing. That's in.
I know. I'm aware of that. But that's what immediately came into my mind.
Okay, no worries.
What would I be thankful for? I don't know what I'd be thankful for. See, there's so many things that I can say, but again, I sound like a bellend, so I don't know.
I could answer for the probably rest of the pod. I'd say Steve would say flumps, and Neil would probably say horny women. I should imagine say that.
But do you know what? I kind of agree. I mean, I'm not fussed about horny women, but I do love a good flump.
Don't really agree with that.
So I don't know why you don't like flumps. They are the best. The cereal sucked bum holes, but the actual marshmallows, I've got a whole box full of them on my desk, sat literally right next to me. Like a box full of, did have 50 in it, it's now got about 35.
Wow. I remember when you said that you got that box and they would last, what, 2 or 3 months?
Yeah.
Did you mean they'd last 2 or 3 months if your husband hid them for a month?
Maybe. Yeah, they're just really good. I love flumps. They are just the best marshmallow ever. Unless you're toasting them, they're shit for toasting. Don't have a flump if you want to do like s'mores or something on the barbecue.
No, use those big ones. It's absolutely, oh my God, they're so good. I love those massive marshmallows. They're well nice. But on a tangent, a really funny scene when you kind of say, can we just talk about what we're really grateful for? You would never see it because you haven't got children, but you do have the film Diary of a Wimpy Kid, where they sit around his mate's table and the family are really prim and proper, and they talk about what they're grateful for. And it's a really, really funny scene. If anyone's got children and they've seen Diary of a Wimpy Kid, that they probably know what I'm talking about. It's absolutely brilliant. And in this film, you've got the whole family in a lovely mansion, and they've clearly got lots of money. And you meet the neighbours at the start who are quite insignificant, and they're very, very two-faced people, which you can really, they play that well because they've got lots of money. And I should imagine on their estate, it's all trying to outdo the next door neighbours, isn't it?
Yeah, it's keeping up with the Joneses, isn't it? You always, like, was it Mrs. Bouquet or Mrs. Bucket?
Yeah.
How she's always trying to outdo the neighbour and go one better. But I find in all American set films, it's like that in settings like this. You're always trying to have the most pristine garden and the best mowed lawn and the fancy pruned flowers and all that kind of shit. It's always a competition, and I'd hate that.
Yeah, because you got she goes outside and Grace is there with some cookies, and while she's talking to her, you've got some other neighbors who pull up.
Mary, so glad I caught you. I come bearing gifts.
What have I done to deserve a gift, Grace?
Oh, I have a new hobby, baking. Mary. I made way too many cookies. Hi!
Ooh, cookies. I hope you're hungry. Those cookies are crazy good.
They're lovely. Have a safe night, ladies.
Okay.
Bye.
Bit of foreshadow. Remember these faces? I forgot all about them, to be honest, because they will be in it later on. You can tell just through the fake smiles that it's really, like, just so forced and... It's awful. I'd hate to have this. I'd rather have normal, genuine fucking people than trying to outdo everyone. I mean, I've got fuck all, so I don't think I'm only competition, to be honest.
I'd rather just have no neighbours. I don't really like people. I'm quite antisocial. I just don't want neighbours. I don't want to have the idle chit-chat. I just want to do my thing, like, not worry about other people and just get on with it. I don't need to speak to people who live next door to me or down the road. I don't need that.
Yeah, because you've got the Halversons who pull up, and you've got Grace Ferrin, who's the next door neighbour, and Grace is the one who turns around and I love the way she says it. Oh, just a throwaway comment that not everyone kind of had the ear you did.
You know, not everyone had the ear you did, Mary.
What do you mean?
You know your husband sold a new security system to almost every home in this community. You know, some people are actually saying this neighborhood paid for that new addition on your home.
Are people really saying that?
Relax. It's just good old neighborhood gossip. Nothing to worry about. You're too sensitive.
And it's a bitchy comment. But you need to notice, when she says this, there's more of a human expression on her face. She's blinking. She's smiling. It's more normal. When you see Grace later on, towards the end of the film, she does not blink, and they did that on purpose.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, when you look at her, or when she's talking about what she's going to do, spoilers, obviously, that going to sacrifice the whole family and they're going to purge them, that she doesn't blink. She's got no expression on her face.
Really, I didn't know she didn't blink, but she does. Her total expressionless face is quite obviously evident.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? And one of the favourite characters who you really, really like, the son, Charlie. Mm. Charlie looks like a typical spoiled brat. He's into his tech. He's got everything he asked for. And one thing that he does mention, there is no payoff for this. When they're going around the table and Zoe's talking about her like recital that she's doing, and Charlie's offerings is that he takes his kind of blood pressure or heart rate, but doesn't come into the story. He says, oh, it was up today.
By the way, there's a slight deviation in my heart rate, but other than that, nothing to worry about.
Okay, thank you. Zoe, you're dead.
That never comes into the film, does it? Why do they mention that?
I kind of took that as being that he's like a little bit OCD, so everything has to be like perfect and in order and in a certain way for him. Mm. And so he kind of, if something feels like this is the right way to do something, which kind of feeds into what he does later on, but this is the right thing to do, so this is what you do, you don't think about the consequences.
Okay, so, yeah.
Like when he was building his little, what did he call it? Is it Timmy? The little...
Yeah, the robot thing. With a burnt face. And
yeah,
just plays
that
thing.
Music. It all had to be perfect, so it had to be silent, and he played music, and he's like made it perfect. It's not just... This is a robot that's got a camera on it, or like a remote control car with a camera on it. It's a proper little covert spying thing, which obviously comes into it. But everything has to be exact. And I think that's kind of what feeds into what happens later.
And this family, to make it clear, the Sandin family are all against the purge. You get the scene where Mary's talking to Charlie about, are you scared? And it's just, it's been voted in and it's just a way of life. And they don't agree to people going out murdering, and they're dead against it, and they just choose to spend the night just together watching a film. That's what they plan. So it's not that they're a bloodthirsty family and they're bringing that kind of attitude into their kids, are they?
No, they're trying to be like the typical American family, aren't they, that are law-abiding and lovely people.
They are, but one thing they don't count on is Henry, who's Zoe's boyfriend. They're kind of at it upstairs, and you think he's left, but he hasn't. And he's a lot older than Zoe. I think Zoe must be about 16 or 17, do you think?
I don't know that she's that old, because she's still in school uniform, isn't she? And at that age, they'd be at college, wouldn't they? So they'd be in their own clothes, and I think he's 18. So I think she's only about 15.
That makes it college even age. Worse, doesn't it?
Well, I think that's why they're against it. Like,
I'm glad they
so
are.
Much older. Oh, yeah. Well, as it turns out, he's a bit of a knob, isn't he? But
he is, because he doesn't... They kind of say goodbye, and you learn later on that he is actually hiding in the house. You don't see him hide in the house at all, but he does reappear later on. And when the family are kind of getting ready, because it's 7 in the evening till 7 in the morning, that's when they have the lockdown. They're all gathered around their monitors and they're just ready for the sirens to go. And it's really eerie, isn't it? You get those sirens like we had at the start of the pod. And it's just kind of, this is so final. The voice that does the narration tells everyone what's happening. It's just weird that it's so official. It's almost like a blood sport. And they do have that in the Purge election year, where they get people coming over from like South Africa who are game hunters who come to...
Oh my God.
Yeah, come over to America just for the purge. And it's like murder terrorism. And that's one of the things that they bring into it.
Okay, that's something to look forward to if I watch all the others. But going on this one with the sirens and stuff, it reminded me of the siren that they do when someone escapes from a mental hospital, and they do it to alert the local residents and stuff.
I just think it's really eerie and creepy. And their warning they give out, it says government officials ranking 10 have been granted immunity from the purge.
Why?
And I'd like to know more about that, would you?
Yeah, I want to know why. Why have they... If they're the people, I presume, that have voted this in or have allowed this law to pass, I guess. I mean, I don't know. Again, there's no information on it. But why are they immune from it?
This is not a test. This is your emergency broadcast system announcing the commencement of the annual purge sanctioned by the U.S. government. Weapons of Class 4 and lower have been authorized for use during the purge. All other weapons are restricted. Government officials of ranking 10 have been granted immunity from the purge.
They're the people to blame as such. So,
They are voted in. And in the purge election year, you do get like one of the senators and she's against it. And it looks like she's going to be voted in. So the kind of public want this to a certain degree, but they've got certain weapons, which is interesting that I think weapons class 4 and above aren't allowed. And so there's certain rules. It's just really weird. It's just a fucking awful night. I'm glad they don't do things like this. Whether something will come in the future, I really, really don't know.
I think you're pretty safe on that one, but there's just a lot of questions that are raised just from that little statement that they never actually answer in the film.
No, some of it does come apparent in the later films. I mean, the Purge election year does bring it in, and the first Purge, that's quite right. Good as well, because they do bring a lot of things in of how, obviously, it's just starting and it's the first Purge. So again, yeah. You've got like the government side and more of the rule-based things on there.
Okay. So,
if we do them, it will become a lot more apparent. But the sirens do go off and they try and make it a nice evening. But the evening's kind of fucked up straight away because you've got Charlie's just sitting there with his camera. He's looking at the CCTV outside. There's loads of things going on. And you see this figure who's running, shouting for help. And clearly none of the other residents are going to let him in. That's so obvious. But because you get the hint of when he's talking to Mary, his mum, at the start about he's scared and it's not right that people are dying, he makes that choice to open the barriers, open the gates, and let this guy in.
I just need to get somewhere safe. Does anybody hear me? Look, I won't hurt you. I don't want to die. I don't deserve this. Why won't anybody help me? I
just need someone to hide. Somebody, please, just open the door. They're coming, Kitty. Somebody, please. They're going to kill me. And I kind of wondered how it would have played out had kind of what happened with Henry.
What do you mean? We see how it plays out.
No, because Henry suddenly comes on the scene and he's in the house. And he's like, no, I want to front out your dad. I want him to know that I'm the man for you and that you can't stop us. All this nonsense that we can't see each other.
Right.
Which has been done in loads of films. I initially thought that he did actually want to talk to him. But just as this bloody stranger, the black guy, comes through the barriers and he's there, he hasn't got a gun. He's of no threat. I know they don't know that at the moment. He's of no threat. I wondered if it would have played out different if Ethan Hawke would have just said to him, like, what do you want? And the guy was said, I'm being chased. I just want somewhere to stay the night. And they would have kind of had a more civil conversation. But it's just the fact that Henry comes down the stairs. And in fact, he doesn't want to talk to Ethan Hawke. He wants to fucking kill him and just pulls out a gun. And they have a shootout, don't they?
I didn't come here to see you. I came to see your father.
What? Why?
It's time to straighten this out. He cannot forbid you from seeing me. Well, that's crazy.
It might be crazy, but he's not going to change his mind. He thinks you're too old for me. Talking to him is only going to make him more angry, and he'll make it more difficult for us.
I promise. Everything is going to be okay.
Yeah, I don't really understand why the black guy doesn't have a conversation. You've just been brought into the house. You could at least appreciate that to start with.
Yeah. But I suppose he's walked into absolute chaos of, I thought I was safe. Well, I suppose he might think, I thought I was safe in the house. Then all of a sudden, this kid runs down the stairs, starts shooting his other one. He starts shooting back.
Mr. Sandin.
James, he has a gun! Henry has a gun!
And then he must think, well, is this a place of safety or am I going to get fucking shot next? Is this just a house of, like, fucking mental cases, you know?
House of horrors. I don't know. I think bearing in mind the sort of night that, or the night that it is, you pretty much know anywhere you go, you're at risk, right? That's what this night is.
But why don't they have a panic room?
I don't know. See, that I don't. I would be locked indoors, and I'd be in like a little dungeon that no one can get in, and it would literally be locked down, time locked for an hour, so no one can get in, no one can get out.
You've probably got some type of dungeon at your house. That's what worries me. I don't think it'd be one that
kind,
protects
though.
You.
Very, very different kind.
Not somewhere that someone would feel safe.
Oh, no, you definitely feel safe.
Just because you're tied up, it doesn't mean you're safe. You know that.
Oh. Okay.
But I thought they would. The room with the CCTV in, I thought would be like a panic room that they could just stay in there, like just in case, like a contingency. He seems the type of man, James Sandin, who would have a contingency, but he's got nothing. And why don't they just let this guy who's run away? He clearly hasn't got any guns on him. He hasn't got any weapons on him. I know he could arm himself, but just they all group together and possibly like just wait it out.
Well, that's what I mean. He doesn't have a conversation. I mean, the boyfriend comes down and fucks it up anyway. Because
he dies. Good. I'm glad he's out of it.
Yes, he does. He dies very early on, and he kind of deserves everything he got for that, I'm afraid, because I've come to tell your dad that I'm the right person for you, and the way to do that is by shooting him. Brilliant. That's genius way of thinking, because you're now going to love me because I've just shot your dad.
Yeah, it's all about first impressions. But
yeah, I mean, how is she ever going to get over that? But anyway, that aside, he ruins it by completely, like, just spoiling the atmosphere and shooting out and causing that scene to happen. But the black guy doesn't help himself. That aside, he says nothing. He does nothing. He just disappears into their house.
Yeah, he could come out. Yeah, it would have been a lot easier if he would have come out with his hands up and just said, look, I'm no trouble, I'm no threat to anyone, and I just want to stay here, and if you just let me stay here, it'll be fine. I know it soon changes, because after half an hour, you do then get our polite leader, Reese Wakefield, turn up with his friends. These masks they're wearing are incredible, aren't they?
I think, was it Halloween?
It was no, we were doing the black phone, weren't we? And I sent out those masks to talk about.
Yeah, whichever film it was that you sent the picture at, this was the mask that I said would freak me out the most. And it hasn't got any better, I'll be honest. It hasn't got any better.
It's good.
The sort of thing of nightmares.
Yeah, and they apparently went through, like the costume designers went through hundreds of different masks before they actually got to the right one. And I think this mask is absolutely terrifying. I think it's awful. And I've never seen any film with the same kind of mask. And it's just fucking creepy. But it's great. They walk up to the front door. Our polite leader, Reese Wakefield, has got such a weird face that he doesn't... He does wear a mask to start with, but he doesn't need a mask, does he?
No, he doesn't need it at all.
Let me introduce us. We are some fine, young... very educated guys and gals. We've gotten gussied up in our most terrifying guises, as we do every year, ready to violate, annihilate, and cleanse our souls. But things took a turn. Our target escaped us, and several of your dear neighbors informed us that you, the Sandins, have inexplicably given him sanctuary. Mr. and Mrs., the man you're sheltering is nothing but a dirty homeless pig. A grotesque menace to our just society who had the audacity to fight back.
And I think what makes it more creepy is that Reese Wakefield is very polite, isn't he? He's not rude at all. He's threatening, menacing, but in his initial introduction, he's very polite.
He tries to come across as very charming and as if, come on now, we all do this, we all know what happens, this is just standard, just hand him over, it's not a big deal. And when that doesn't work, his true colours show.
It sounds like he's targeting homeless people, like to him, the very bottom of the barrel.
Yes, he's definitely, they're all targeting homeless people, aren't they, saying they're scum, they're, you know, why would you protect them, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know, I don't know that he's... I definitely think he's spoilt and entitled, but maybe he was just born into it and hasn't got a clue, I guess, yeah.
Because it could have gone, this film, a lot of horror films we did, like The Wrong Turn, where you get decent people, law-abiding people, who have their moral compass affected, and they're being chased, say, again, like Wrong Turn, by a group of, like, cannibals or psychos. And to survive, it takes these normal people who are victims to turn into what their predators are, like monsters. With that want to kill. And this film could have very easily have followed that trope, but it doesn't, does it?
No, not at all. It's not. No, it doesn't go along those lines. It doesn't even, I guess that's where it's not predictable. And yeah. Like, I know I said it is predictable at the start, but there are parts of it that we'll get to that completely did throw me. So I guess that is another one. Like you say, it's not, it doesn't follow that trope. So it isn't predictable in that way.
Because it's that dilemma of you've got a homeless man who every day walked past in the street. This family, I don't think, to be honest, Ethan Hawke would have given him any money or been very charitable. But the rest of the family, I can imagine, would have done, would have possibly given him some money or some food, where due to the situation and the level of violence that's been put against them, that even Ethan Hawke is now, all we need to do is just going to go and force him outside. He can die. And then we can get on with our night. And it's a real, it's a scruples, it's a moral dilemma.
Yeah, I was just about to say, what would you do? You've got kids.
What would I do? I'd chuck the geezer outside.
The pig doesn't know his place, and now he needs to be taught a lesson. You need to return him to us, alive.
If it's me or them, I'm going to do everything I physically can to make sure it's not me.
Yeah, he'd get bored of my company anyway, and he'd get bored of the dogs just jumping up on him. And
he'd probably thank you for kicking him back out, to be honest. Well, thank fuck for that. I'd rather die.
He probably would do. My wife's flatulence. It would just be like, he'd be using the buzzer to let himself outside. And I mean, if anyone got into your house over your 6 foot, 10 foot high gates and then just across the courtyard and beats the CCTV and alarms, then good luck to them. They deserve a place in your house.
But yeah. No, carry on.
What? Because all I said is true and you've got no comeback on it?
No, I was going to say, no, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say it because you're putting it in and I'm not going to say it.
Oh, what is it?
Nothing.
Is it another thing that involves something floppy and dangly between someone's legs?
No, not this time. No, no.
Oh my God, well, no, I don't need to hear what it is then.
Okay, carry on.
All right, you're not going to say it. Fine. All right. I'll take you back to that bit where when I do speak, it's the truth.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't want to say the truth, so I'm keeping my mouth shut. I'm just not saying anything. But what I have said is the truth. I was going to say my house is not much different to theirs, apart from the fact I don't have this massive security thing and people still got into their security thing. But I don't really want that sentence to be out there.
It is already, so thank you so much. I appreciate that. But isn't it creepy when they got such big machetes? I hate those machetes. They're just awful.
They're not for anything else, really, are they? Let's be honest.
No, they're just hideous things. And they're going around the house looking for the guy. And we learned that, and a kind of a bit of foreshadow at the start of this, where Charlie's got this little hidden room behind this wooden board. And the guy's in there and he's guided there by the little kind of remote control dummy that Charlie's driving around Timmy. The house, Timmy. And he kind of stays in there, which does backfire later on, because that's all of a sudden Mary's going to hide in there as well, which would have been the worst hiding place in the world had he gone there. But all of this bit for me, I don't know, it just feels a bit padded out, even though the film was about an hour and a half. It's just a bit that the hunting around the house, trying to find the guy, was too padded out. I wanted to know the consequence of what if they don't find him.
Well, we soon find that out, but it's not what I expected.
And did you expect when he goes to the front door, being Ethan Hawke, and he's saying, look, we're trying to find him. We can't find him at the moment. That's the trouble. My house is so small. It would take literally a minute for me to find a bloke. There is nowhere to hide. And even the other day, on another tangent, when the kids try and play hide and seek the dogs always run out in the garden with them. So it's impossible to hide because the dogs will just sit next to you. So
but would the dogs follow a stranger, though?
They would to probably Molly, I reckon, would follow them to attack them. She's quite fierce.
Okay. No, I can definitely lose people in.
Oh, yes.
Have lost people in my house, so I know what he's talking about.
Oh, my Lord. I wish there was others on the pod. When you make comments like that, honestly. Really sickening. But
I mean,
it's good.
I'm surprised you're not ripping me to shreds, to be honest. This is the sort of film where you could absolutely pull me to pieces. And you're not. So far, you haven't.
So far, exactly.
Okay.
But it's not too long where we do get the level of violence. They're not just threats from our polite leader, Reese, when he's saying, if you don't come out, we've got some friends on our way now and they will be able to get into your house, no problem. And one of his mates shouts out some abuse and then he just gets shot in the head because he's being a bit vulgar. And that's when you really see that our polite leader is an absolute psycho. He's crazy, isn't he?
They all are. They're all, yeah, they are bloodthirsty killers. They've all got a little bit of a screw loose, I would say.
But it was good to see that level of violence, that threat that was actually there and is actually real. Because I think as an audience, like a viewer watching this, I wanted to see that. I wanted a kill. Because we
just like blood and guts.
Well, no, it's The Purge and it's about murder and it wasn't really.
It definitely
much.
Needed a level of violence because they were bigging it up, weren't they, saying we'll do this, we'll do that. If they then didn't follow through with that, it would be really disappointing.
Yeah, it would have been nice if they would have got some people to sacrifice it, like in front of them and said, look, we'll do this, we'll do that. And they actually go and do it and cut their heads off.
But he shot his mate in the head.
Yeah, that was good. And I needed that. And I really did. And the stakes are upped again. Zoe's found by the homeless guy. He puts a gun against her head. And this is your first time and really the only time that he poses a threat towards the family. Where, again, I think if one of them would have lowered their gun, it could have been sorted out really, really fast, couldn't it?
What, you think if one of them had backed down, it would have been dealt with better?
I think if even Hawk would have backed down, it would have been dealt with a lot quicker. Because the black guy isn't getting out. And even if he would have killed Zoe, regardless of the purge being on or off, he would have been killed.
I don't know. I mean, I know that he at this point was fighting for his life, which I guess explains it. But I still don't understand his hostility towards the family. Why don't you, like you said, why don't you have a conversation? If you'd have explained yourself a little bit more to start with, potentially you wouldn't be in this position.
Yeah, because I don't know if at the time that he knows that the people are outside after him and that he's only being hunted as a bargaining chip. I don't know whether he knows that at this time.
He's got to, hasn't he? Otherwise, why is he hiding? And why would the kid be trying to save him?
But he ran off earlier and hid, like, instantly when he witnessed the shooting between Henry and James, Ethan Hawke, didn't he? So, and he, even though the wife is Mary's behind them and she's got a gun, they still manage to fuck the whole scenario up, don't they? Somehow Zoe is rescued and they end up tying up the black guy. And this is the first time you see signs of kind of switching to more of a killer. Where Ethan Hawke's like, we will hand him over. This is what we're going to do. We'll just put him on a chair, wheel him out, and he can be sacrificed. But still, even then, I suppose because there's been no indication that the people outside can actually get in, they're still against it, aren't they?
I would say at this point, what's his name? James, Ethan Hawke, is having genuine battles with himself in the, I want him to go because I want to protect my family, but I don't want to kill him because I'm not for that. So I would say it's at this point for a few minutes he is having real kind of like a moral dilemma because he knows what the right thing to do is, but then he puts his family at risk potentially.
And the only people that kind of a common sense is coming from Mary, his wife at the moment, but Mary soon picks up that letter opener and shoves it in like the wound in his chest, which is really out of character. And then all of a sudden she's like, no, I can't do this. What are we doing as a family? This just isn't right. And that's when for me, it's Ethan Hawke's switch of, no, we're going to do something completely different. I don't get the idea that he has an idea of what he's doing, but I don't believe it's kind of like some epiphany of, this is wrong, I've got a plan, because there was no plan.
No, I just think they're in that moment, they're trying to sort of show that they're panicking, aren't they? Because they don't know what to do for the best. They know their lives are at risk, as in the supposed real risk from these crazy people.
Mm.
But they don't want to be responsible for somebody else's death.
Hey, look at me. Huh? Look at me, Mary. Mary.
What's wrong?
Listen, I don't have a choice.
It's so wrong.
Benny,
this is so wrong.
Listen, we don't have any other choice.
Don't,
we don't have a choice.
Don't touch me.
We're
okay,
not,
look at you.
I'm sorry.
No, no, no. Don't touch me. When did this happen? James, look at you. What the hell happened to us, James?
I suppose they're trying to make it as real as possible, aren't they? And what would you do in real life if this was the situation? And you do have morals, and you aren't a killer, and you aren't a psychotic lunatic. What do you do when you're trying to set a good example for your kids? Because obviously Charlie's there, and he's seeing it all. It puts like a whole different spin on it, I would say. So you are, they're trying to show it, I guess, like a proper family, and thinking, holy fuck, what do I do?
But it's interesting because you can kill the person. And that's the thing, the rules say you can. So
the rules say you can, doesn't mean it's right.
I know it's right, but I don't say, I know it's not right.
No, I'm saying it doesn't mean it is
right. Yeah, I know. Yeah, that slip of the tongue, Freudian slip there. My psychotic side's coming out.
It's fine, we can do it. Yeah. They've said it's okay.
But it is okay, because I know it's morally, ethically wrong, but on a night where you are in such a position, then there is nothing wrong with chucking this guy outside and him being murdered to save your family, because you can get away with it. If it's of all nights you can do it, do it.
It's not really about getting away with it, though, is it? It's about, you've got to live with yourself then. Whether you did it at a time when it was legal or not legal, you've still got to live with yourself that you killed someone, or that you allowed somebody to be killed.
But he's killed Henry already. What's the difference? It was protect himself and his family, or shoot Henry, and he shot Henry, and he got over that pretty quick.
Yeah, but this guy hasn't yet, when he was shooting, or not shooting, but when he had the gun to his, Zoe's head, I think if they hadn't have taken control of it the way they did, he would have shot him, because I think he shot Henry as a response to Henry shooting him.
Hmm.
And it's very different. This guy hasn't actually shot or actually physically hurt anyone. The black guy also is having a dilemma of, holy fuck, what do? I'm in someone else's house. They have saved me, but they also could kill me. They now want to throw me out as bait. What the fuck do I do? So they're all having their internal
battles,
yeah, with what do I do? I know this is right, and I know that's okay to do. So should I go and do that? I think they do that quite well. I think they show that they're struggling with their moral compasses. I think they do that quite well. And I think the panic in the way they try to deal with things, like stabbing him with the what is it, let ripener and stuff like that. She does it, and then she's like, what the fuck am I doing? So I think they do that quite well.
Do you think it would be better in this film, or do you think it, I don't know, if they didn't do this with such a rich family? If it was a normal family, do you think it would be different in a way that their moral compass is different, like a working class family?
I might get shot down saying this, but I would say that people in their circumstances, I'll put it like that, I would say have less of a moral compass than people who are not quite so lucky.
So rich people like yourself have a lower moral compass than if it was a working class family. That's interesting to know. It really is. And again, I appreciate your honesty on that. But it's not long until the people outside do turn up with big cars and chains, and they pull their very, very easy, considering he has have the best security system. It's like an absolutely crap security system, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very disappointing how easily they get into it.
Yeah, if it was one night, where anyone can do any crime. I'm so disappointed as to how easy it is for these cars to rip these huge iron doors off the front of their house. It's so easy. I don't quite understand how. It's not a very good fucking advert, is it?
No, I thought that when it was that easy to get into it, if people were determined and genuinely wanted to kill you from the start, all they've got to do is make preparation and it's easily done. It's just... But what I don't get, if these people didn't know that he was going to get into someone's house, how are they all prepared and ready to do this within whatever it is, the time limit that they give?
I suppose they're driving around. They know it. He's called people in, hasn't he, already?
Yeah.
To do this. So it's probably something that they'll do on shops and stuff like that. But this is when the film, like the climax is coming and it gets really interesting because the baddies are in their house. And now it is a fact, regardless if you want to do it or not, it is kill or be killed. And it gets really interesting. And I know you really want to speak about this. Charlie is trying to hide and look out for baddies in the pitch black whilst using the torch, shining it around the room to see who's around. Thoughts on that, Cal?
Well, he's a kid, so I'll be nice because maybe he's not thinking straight. Again, he might be panicking. But what the fuck, dude? You're trying to hide in the pitch black. Turn the fucking torch off.
Yeah, it annoyed me so much. I was like, please someone find him, because this kid, if anyone in the family needs to die, I wouldn't have minded either of the kids. Zoe has zero input in this film. She's just nothing. She plays a bit of the star, and they was going to have it written in that she's the one who wants to kill her dad, but then they, once they were going through the writing of it and the scripts, that it didn't read right, and they just changed it for Henry to be the one. But none of these kids are really of any interest, are they?
No, I mean, it would have kind of been just desserts, I think, if Charlie had at least got injured, because had he not have opened the gate in the first place, none of this would have happened.
Do you think his opening the gate warrants, what, a stabbing or a broken arm or leg? What do you think it warrants?
I mean, he at least needs a good old bitch slap upside the head, because it's like, dude, use your common sense. I know you're not old, or you're not old, that's the wrong word, but you're not...
of a level of maturity, you understand?
Yeah, exactly. He's going to panic, and I get that. But you're also, you know what the night is. Use common sense. You're not too young to understand the risks, clearly, because you're petrified of the night. You were worried about it. So why? Oh, yeah, there's a lot that irritated me about him.
Big old punishment that he's going to get afterwards, definitely. And they get in a house, and Charlie does get kidnapped, but he gets saved by his dad. Gunshots in this are really, really loud. And you've got Mary being stalked by someone who's constantly behind them. And the best fight is between James, Ethan Hawke, when he fights off three people in like their billiard room, their snooker room. Really good fight, really full on. And he puts up a quality fight, doesn't he?
He does, and I'll give it to him in this. He played that part. If that's him, that's not like a double or anything, is it?
No, it's him.
Not being duped. Yeah, then he played that part very well. He did. It looks pretty realistic, the way he reacts. The speed of it, it's very good.
Yeah, choreography is great. I mean, he shoots the girl off the table with a shotgun. He's getting beaten, and he puts one guy's head through like this glass and starts rubbing his face in the glass. And again, someone else jumps through the window and he shoots him. And the good thing is, he puts an axe in him.
He goes round, though, at the end and actually shoots them to make sure that's what you want. That's what you shout at the TV when they smack someone over the head with something and think they've killed them and they've only knocked them out and they come back and get them later. Why didn't you just shoot them? Yes, exactly that.
Yeah, exactly. And how many times have we said in so many films that we've reviewed, you hit them, you stab them once, you walk away and you turn your back? They deserve to die, but he doesn't. He goes around with a shotgun close range and pumps a shot into every single one. And then I was so surprised he turns a corner and our polite leader just puts a bayonet into his stomach. I did not see that coming on first viewing.
No, I didn't see that one coming at all. And I can't remember. Does he die? I can't remember. But yeah, I think that's good, because it's not predictable. It's not what you expect to happen, because you think he's going to be, like you say, the hero, and he saves everything, and then he gets done over, which I think is actually a very, very good turn.
And it's interesting that Mary gets taken as well, and it's really creepy, and that when she's being held down, that one of the girls, it's not violent, it's just the enjoyment they're getting from torturing her. Because she even gets like tickled as she's got like this massive machete in her hand. And you just think she's about to die. And to be honest, if she would have died on the I don't give a fuck factor, would you have, Kel?
See, for her, yeah, probably a little bit. Because, again, she was innocent in the whole thing. She didn't ask for any of this. She's not the dickhead husband who's prancing around going, I've made all this money off of all of our neighbours. She's kind of a victim of her own circumstance, isn't she?
She is. I don't know whether I would have really cared a lot if she would have died. Just as she's about to be killed, both the male and female who are going to, the antagonists there, both get shot. And initially, I didn't pick up who shot them, did you?
What, the people? Yeah, I knew that. Yeah, I knew we'd seen them before. To be honest, I couldn't remember that they were neighbours specifically, but I knew we'd seen them before.
It's Mr. and Mrs. Halverson who was in the car, the neighbours, when Mary was talking to Grace. And I didn't get that on first view, and I think I was just so surprised that they were shot. And when Charlie's looking outside on the CCTV, all of the other purges outside are there, and they're all being executed. And initially I thought it was the neighbours there who all come together to say, we're one big community and we look after each other. Did you?
Mm. Yep. This is where I would say it's really unpredictable. And I think they do very well with the ending.
But people haven't seen it, Kel. What is the twist in the ending?
Well, the neighbours save them from the weird people and then want to kill them themselves because they hate them because they've taken all their money and got rich off of their dime, basically.
Yeah, it's a pure jealousy thing, isn't it? And it's when you look at the face of Grace when she's talking, she just completely switches, and they drag Ethan Hawke away because he's dying. There's no sport in killing someone who's dying already. And they put the family together in like the hallway and they tie them all up, and then they just circle them and start kind of saying this, it's not like the national anthem, but it's like a prayer, isn't it, for the purge?
Yeah, it's what's read out, isn't it, on the at the beginning, isn't it, from the scroll? Isn't it the wording from that?
I'm not too sure, because they say it in all the other films as well.
Okay.
When they talk about their kind of, like, the forefathers who have allowed this night, a kind of anarchy to a certain extent. And thankfully they do it, because it kind of allows time for, just before the family get murdered, for our bloody stranger to turn up. And that Timmy, the remote control car, drives past. And that's when you know they're all going to be saved. A fair play. He at least takes one out, doesn't he?
He does, to prove his point that he's not pissing around. Yeah, and I quite like this. This I did sort of see coming, because you hadn't covered off where he went. So you kind of saw this bit coming.
But you see what I mean about Grace not really blinking? She's just got that expression.
Yeah, she's kind of gone. She's gone psycho killer. She's got nothing behind the eyes. She's just vacant.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting in these films when they just do those little things. At the start of it, she's very homely, very nice and natural. And in the night of the purge, that she is completely like kind of schizophrenic Jekyll and Hyde character of, I'm going to kill you and we're going to have really good fun. And she even says, I'll go first and then you can follow after once I've stabbed them. So they're getting great pleasure out of killing their neighbours just for the fact, as you said, out of pure jealousy, isn't it?
Yeah, she doesn't like the fact that they've made all their money off of their dime and they're really rich and these other people are paying for it, basically. They're paying for that lifestyle for them, and money does some horrible things to people, though.
Really wouldn't know. I really wouldn't know. But I found a fiver the other day, and that was really exciting for me. That was the highlight of my month. Again, the moral compass is always in question here, because despite the fact that they were going to be grouped up, they're going to be executed, part of the purge. Again, Mary doesn't want them killed. The stranger offers up, what do you want me to do? It's your call. If you want them executed, I think he would have done it on their behalf, but he would have happily killed them. But it does make me happy that I think it's Grace tries to grab her gun and then she smacks her in the face with the butt of the shotgun.
That's brilliant.
Because that's not enough. She smashes her head against a glass table.
Didn't you hear what I said? No more killing tonight! Isn't that hard to understand?
Yep. I love that bit. It's so good.
Yep, I think that is brilliant. I think she deserved that and some. And I think the way that that is done, because she just can't take any more. Mary can't take any more. And it's like, shut the fuck up. And she actually shows her what she's feeling. I think that's brilliant.
And they kind of do long it out. And then the purge alarm goes. And that is it. It's all over. And the neighbours do leave. And we don't know whether the dad, James, Ethan Hawke, dies or not, do we? He's not seen.
No, that's what I say. I don't know if he is actually dead. But I guess if you've seen the other films, is he dead or do they not cover that?
He's not in the other films.
So, you don't know. I presume the lack of him being there around the table at the end is kind of suggestive that he does die. Because then he's not there in the final scenes either, is he?
No, when they're kind of looking at... I think the only person who's in it twice is Frank Grillo, who is in two films in a row, I think. He plays the bodyguard for one of the senators. He's in the film after that, but I don't think off the top of my head that there's any mention of this incident. But you're kind of left with the fallout of, you've got loads of dead bodies laying around. Where do they go? And what's life like now, up until the next purge, in that neighbourhood, after what's happened?
You'd have to move, wouldn't you? You would have to move because this family would have to move because you would be absolutely petrified for the next purge that your neighbours are all going to come back and kill you because you smashed that woman's face in. She probably needs some dentistry and surgery of some kind. So that's going to fuck her off. I think you would have to leave. And potentially your husband has been stabbed to death inside, along with various other people being shot, stabbed, killed, in various different ways. And it's just not going to be nice memories, and she's going to have fuckloads of money, isn't she? So you just move and take your kids elsewhere.
Yeah, because I think they have like the HFF, who are like the honorary forefathers, I think that's what it is, in like the election year, come around collecting the bodies as the night goes on, like in the old days when I had a cart with people dead from the plague, and they do that. So it'll be interesting to know what happens if there's a cleanup crew who will pick up 20 dead bodies and get rid of all the cars and whose responsibility it is.
What happens to it all? Where does it go?
Yeah, it's got so much disease. Do the family who own the kids come back and find them? And
yeah, do you have funerals for all these people? Do you burn them? Do you?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
What do you do with them? Yeah.
So, but that is the end. That is the Purge 2013. I mean, what are your thoughts on that with regards to, is it a good film? Is it going to, you're kind of like a 1.5 at the most amazing film too. Where did this film sit?
I would give it a solid 2. I wouldn't call it an amazing film, but it's got some good points in it. It's got some shit points in it. And there's some where you just think, I wish they'd just left that out and didn't need it. But it has got a good story. It's got a few twists in it where it's not predictable. It's got quite a lot of blood and gore and some good kills. So, yeah, I'd say if you've got 1.5 hours you want to kill, it's a film you could watch. I don't know that I would shout it from the rooftops and say it's an amazing film, but I think there are parts that they do very well. So, yeah, I would recommend it, just gently.
Because it's weird, because it's one of those films where if you just sat and watched it, you think, yeah, it's all right. It kind of plods along. And the ending did catch me off guard. Didn't expect that. When you watch it for, like we do, like the critical eye, to talk about it, I think it's quite an interesting film to talk about, of the the moral compass of these people and yeah. what's right and what's wrong, and where the line becomes blurry of is it right and is it still wrong because you're allowed to do it that night. And I think those kind of facts, like My Super Ex-Girlfriend, kind of make it an interesting film to talk about, because it's quite deep in a certain way, isn't it? Doesn't mean it's a good film, but it's quite a deep film to talk about with the points.
Yes, it's got some good talking for, like you say, for a moral compass and stuff like that, because just because it's legal, does it mean it's the right thing to do? Maybe, maybe not, probably not. But some people just do what they're told, don't they, and follow on, and that's the thing to do, so I'm going to do it. But yeah, I think it's got some good talking points. And there's not really a right or wrong in that situation, I guess.
No, I'd probably give it 2.5 out of 5 because I quite enjoyed it. And it's a film I've watched a few times. And there are some really good bits to it. I think it's a really original idea. I really, really like it. But the story does drag. And I just don't like the kid who opens the door. I just don't like it. I don't know what it is. I just don't like it. I think he's smart enough to not let anyone in and know the difference between right and wrong. And yep. I know he's a child, but he's a child who has been brought up in the Purge. And they speak about it at the start of his mum. And I think the family possibly wouldn't be as open. If I had the Purge now, I wouldn't let my kids watch the CCTV of what's going on outside for real life murders like they allow the children to.
And you wouldn't give them the security code, would you? So that they can just press 4 numbers and ping, no. The whole world's open again. You wouldn't do that.
No, you'd still try and shelter them and protect some of their innocence to what's going on. Whereas this family who sit around the table and talk about what they're grateful for and what they did today and just how good they are, which I think they do purely to talk about their wealth alone, or that Ethan Hawke is one, look how good I am, look how successful I am, that you'd, being a dad myself, you want to protect and preserve a certain level of innocence, and I would not let them watch any violence. I tell them about it. This is what it's about. People tonight will murder other people. It's not right. That's all you need to know. So to let their kids have free reign in a house and just watch what's going on. Maybe this is what they do because all he gives a shit about is the status and the money. And as you said earlier, kind of rich people, their boundaries are a lot different to working class people who have worked their bollocks off for what they've got. And these people possibly don't.
I mean, he obviously does work.
But they know about Henry shagging their daughter. They're not happy about it.
No, I get that.
So their kind of moral compass isn't great to start with. So are they a victim of their own arrogance, their own kind of success through Ethan Hawke? They follow his moral compass more.
Oh, that's difficult. I don't know.
I can feel the cogs turning. I'm straining your brain at the moment, aren't I?
You are. I don't know if I agree with that.
That's fine. You don't have to. It's just a question. Just a question.
Yeah, I disagree. I think each of them knows what's right and what's wrong, and they have different levels of it. That's why he switches from, I'm not going to kill, so I'm going to fucking kill, really quickly. She doesn't. She's like, no, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. And the kid is like straight away, oh, there's someone in danger, I need to help them. So they all have their own levels. So they're working off their own compass. They all know what's right and wrong, but they all have varying levels of how far they'll take it.
No, it's an interesting topic. That's what I like about this film. It's basic, but when you pick it apart, it is quite interesting. It does kind of invoke a lot of conversation, which I do like. But that is it. I hope everyone has enjoyed this as much as we have. And again, there are so many films, various films that have led to various, very weird conversations on the pod. And I would refer to 50 Shades we did, which was very enlightening, and My Super Ex-Girlfriend for another one. But there 50
Shades, that was a long time ago now.
It was, and I bet you don't remember half the things you've said on there that's out around the world being listened to, especially by people in the Southern Hemisphere. So, yeah.
I remember pretty much everything I said on that one. I think because it was the first one I did.
Yeah, you let stand and slip now.
I'm just better at dealing with you and your questions.
We all know you a lot better now.
They do indeed. Scary motherfucker, that's a scary thought.
Amazing. Well, thanks everyone. And guys, thanks for your support, your kind of streaming of this. And we've got the YouTube channel, which I haven't updated, I know, for a long, long time. But thanks to everyone who's listened to that as well. We really appreciate your support. And we will be back next week. I don't know what we'll be doing. It could be another Purge film. It could be anything else. I don't know. But we'll be back next week. You guys take care. And thank you. And thank you, Kelly.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
It certainly has. Take care, everyone. Thanks very much.
All the movie clips and music used in this podcast are the intellectual property rights of the respective copyright holder and used to only enhance your listening experience. And any infringement caused is unintended. Well, that's it now, and we will see you next week.